you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
All right, you ready? Okay. There have been a few times in my life where I've nearly lost everything and had to live in my car, or worse. That's just the way it goes around here. Los Angeles seems to be hardest on you when you've missed. It's a fact that's intensified the affordable housing crisis and created a generation of unhoused Angelenos. I was thinking about those moments a lot last spring when COVID shut down my city for the first time and sent us all home. Home. Damn. Is that where you live or where you want to be? Is it wherever my family is? As a small child, that was a tiny trailer in Compton where my bed nearly touched the ceiling. Then it was borrowed time in Long Beach, downtown LA, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, Chicago, Llama Palace, Paramount, HP, Linwood, BG, Downey, Southeast LA forever. And sometimes it was a wooden shed on a hill in Tijuana that was slowly being built into a house. Or my grandparents' rancho in Sinaloa, where you had to use your feet to pump the water while you showered, or run around techos in Culiacan, bathing in that summer rain. Was that my home then? Oof. When I get really, truly sentimental, I think about this car I used to have. A powder blue 1999 Mercury Grand Marquis. I lived in that car, most of the time by choice. And even when it wasn't by choice, I loved and appreciated every inch of Chuck Berry. That's what I named it. Because I was always riding along in my automobile with no particular place to go. I realize I think about those hard living times more often whenever I hit my shop. Because home is wherever my family is and where I want to be, but it's also where I live right now. And that's here with you. I'm Eric Galindo, and this is Wild.
This is Wild, a show about what it's like to grow up during the pandemic. Season one, home forever.
Yeah. How are you? How's life? How's everything?
Everything's cool. You know, like it's hard for me to assess.
That's valid, man. I feel the same. It's like sometimes.
This is Daisy. She created this thing called Hood Renovations. And Hood Renovations is taking these spaces that are usually marginalized, ignored, or erased. And she's making them beautiful. She's making them livable. I want you to meet her. So you grew up in HP. You grew up on Hood Avenue?
Yes, sir.
How was that? Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, Hood Avenue. My childhood, man. What can I tell you? This idea of home is thrown around so much, especially with the pandemic, where it's like, you don't know what people's homes are. Like, you're telling people to stay at home. Like, that's cool, but you come from a place of privilege where you think your home is comfy and nice to be in, but not everybody's home's like that.
Okay, real quick. Daisy and I both grew up in a part of Los Angeles known as Southeast LA. It's mostly working class, Black and Latino residents. We call it Cela. Daisy's little slice of Cela is Huntington Park. We call it HP. Like much of LA, Cela's going through an affordable housing crisis. Nearly half of its residents are renters, and many live packed into multi-generational homes. Daisy, for example, spent most of her childhood living in a tiny one-room apartment with four other people, her parents and two sisters.
So my parents found this apartment through my sister's like pre-K teacher, lived there before, and somehow they knew each other, and like it was word of mouth, like, hey, we're vacating this because we got a home, like, maybe this will work for y'all. And they're like, yeah, yeah, it's cool. We only need it for like half a year while we like figure out a permanent solution to like our housing, because we can't raise a family in a one room apartment. Like, it was tiny. And, you know, 2 months turned into 3 months, turned into 6 months, turned into 6 years, turned into 20 years. Like, we never moved.
Why? Like, why do you think you guys never moved?
You know, we started middle school, and then by the time we wanted to move, my older sister had started high school. And I think that if there's one thing that my parents have always prioritized has been education. You might not have money, but you will be educated, and that's going to be worth a lot more than us giving you absolutely anything. So it was quite apparent that we were not going to move. So we kind of began morphing into a very temporary solution to our housing problem, to kind of like sculpting what the room would look like with five people inside. And that's where the bunk beds came, and, you know, the rules about the dressers. Like, everybody just had your one dresser, your, like, two drawers, and that was it. Like, dad got the closet because, you know, the patriarchy is still real, and he got the closet, and everybody else shared, like, their cajones. The top bunk was my safe space because that was, like, my room, right? Like, I went through, like, an emo phase. I had, like, my Green Day up, my Simple Plan, Good Charlotte up, you know? And then I went through, like, this other phase where I got really into banda. So then all my banda posters were hanging up. And that's what it was. Like,
were they hanging on the roof?
Yes, yes. Literally, like, it was like a 90 degree of posters. I wish I had a picture because my mom was like, I was like, you said this was my space. So I claimed all of it. Keep in mind, like, I went through like puberty there. I went through like being an awkward teenager to like, you know, high school and high school drama and you know, kids are assholes. And, you know, I had really bad acne and I got picked on a lot. And, you know, I went through a lot of phases in that room and like, you know, growing up in that space. And so did my sisters. And I think it's funny because I never thought about it of like, oh, I have no privacy. We just didn't know any better because that's just how we grew up.
That little space was like your little piece of home for such a long time. Did that help you, like, the way you see the world? Did it define you in any way?
Oh, yeah. Like, that's a loaded question. Traumas. I think once I left my little corner of the world on Hood Avenue, I realized the value of my parents' morals and upbringings had on me as a person. I think that they did the best that they could in extreme circumstances to raise us, and they gave absolutely everything they could in order for us to have a good life. And when I think about my little bunk bed, my little twin bunk bed, like all the memories I have of that, that always grounds me because that little corner of the room that I had and that little bunk bed that I had in that space is always going to be me because I don't need much. And I think that stems from having grown up the way I did.
Daisy left Southeast LA for college. She went to undergrad at UC Berkeley and then Boston Law School. She was in her final year about to start an exciting internship when the pandemic hit. Like a lot of us, her first thoughts were with her parents. Her parents are both older, which makes them more vulnerable to catch a bad case of COVID.
My mom in particular has a lot of pre-existing conditions. She's not the healthiest. She has diabetes and all these other problems that Latinos just tend to have. And we got really worried, in particular because one of my parents is undocumented, and healthcare is just not a thing for undocumented folks. Thankfully, in LA, there are a lot more resources than there are for sure in other places. You know, it was just like, from what we were knowing, it's like they were in that target population of people that could severely be very affected if they were to contract this virus.
You're in Boston. You got to move out. 24 hours, you got to empty your, like, flat. How did that go down?
Oh, man. Why you got to bring old shit up, Eric? Why you got to bring up traumas? Oh, I remember vividly. Okay, it was spring break. I didn't go anywhere for spring break. I was still in Boston, and like all of my friends were like Miami, Peru, Cancun. People went to Spain. People went to Ibiza. Like, people were everywhere because it was spring break. Like, this is what people with money in spring break do. Like, they take trips. And like, I was like, well, I have things to do. I have school to study. So I just didn't go anywhere. And then my friend, who was actually a resident director, she's like, you need to leave. And I was like, what? She's like, you need to leave. We're evacuating students as soon as they come back. Like, we're going to use these as like quarantine rooms because the hospitals are overflowed. So they were going to use like the dorms of that university. I was like, what? How am I supposed to leave? Like, it was like a super small studio, but mine came unfurnished. So everything that was in that studio was mine. So like my bed, my dining set, which is like two chairs, a table, my TV, my little thing where you put the TV, my desk, my chair, like all my clothes, and like your typical LA girl, like you need to have like 100 sneakers because that's just what we do in LA, you know? Like my 10 tons of makeup that I own, because again, like such an LA thing to just have like 10,000 pairs of lashes for no reason. Like, you know, that was me. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with all this stuff? And she's like, you need to get a storage. It got scary when I started realizing storages were selling out. Like there was storages near the campus. Like there was no vacants. So I was like, oh my God, like this is getting insane. So then I ended up finding a storage that was a little bit out of the city, but I was like, whatever, I'll take it because that's all there is. And I feel so bad for my clothes because they just thrown in boxes and they're stored somewhere in Boston. And we packed.
Which kicks did you bring with you?
My Air Force platform black. Those are the kicks that have rolled with me. Those are the loyal ones, the only ones I have right now rolling with me. Because, you know, it's such an LA thing to have sneakers. Like, I feel like nobody understands the having sneakers, having fresh sneakers, as LA people do, because Boston did not appreciate my kicks, let me tell you. And the snow was disrespectful. Disrespectful. So anyways, we packed my stuff and we went to fill up the storage and I was gone by Thursday night. And I had two suitcases, my backpack, and I got on a plane to Nashville and that was it. And that was the last time I was in Boston. And when will I ever go back? Who knows?
I gotta go save the rest of those shoes, dude. Like,
yo, I had just bought like the Sage Low, like the light pink suede Air Force. Just got them.
Damn.
Just got them. They're sitting crisp in a box in storage in Boston.
I love that. I love that you you know exactly where they're at right now. You can just picture them, right?
Yeah, I see them. I see them. They're there.
This is The Lonely Shoe Blues, dedicated to all the items out there left behind due to COVID.
Lonely shoe, lonely shoe. Man, I miss the way you crease me. Crease me and I'll crease you back.
Oh, we used to be childish like that. We matched outfits together. Do you think about me? Was it my performance? Or worse, was it my size? Please come back! WTF! I ain't playing with you! There I go again. I'm tripping. I didn't mean that. I'm just not used to the cold shoulder. I'm not meant for the tub, but I want to feel the love. Without the journey, there's no loot. Without construction, there's no boot. What is a fetish without a foot? The agony. Come back to me. Signed with love, your beloved pink suede Air Force Ones. Lonely shoe. Lonely shoe. Lonely shoes.
So if we can go back a little bit, like your parents are both from Mexico, right?
Yes.
Where did they meet? They met here in the U.S.?
No. No. Oh, you're going to love this story. My parents actually met through baseball in Mexico.
Really? How?
My family sees baseball as a religion. Like, you will find Dodgers playing, like, even if it's old games, in my house 365 days a year, every day. Like, there's always baseball. And if we're not watching baseball here, we're watching baseball in Mexico.
Boy, this is an amazing game. The highs and the lows. And so it has come to this. We go to the ninth inning here at Dodger Stadium.
My mom is from Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua. And at the time, there was a baseball team there, Los Indios de Juarez. And there was this baseball player by the name of Leobardo Figueroa playing there. My mom was a fan of the baseball team because she loves baseball. She met his wife. She met the players. They all became friends. And this particular baseball player was like, huh, you should meet my brother. And surely but slowly, it's like all they started sending letters to each other. And then he would come visit my uncle in Juarez from Mazatlan, and they fell in love. Baseball is the common denominator.
They fell in love mm-hmm. through letter writing?
Yeah. There's just boxes and boxes and boxes of letters from and to each other, because my mom kept all of them, and so did my dad. So at one point, I was able to see both. And it's just like the real notebook story, but like in letters.
Wow, that's super romantic. All right, so when did they decide to come to the U.S.?
My grandpa always, like, wanted one of his sons to be, like, an engineer in, like, Las Maquilas de Azúcar, like, the sugar factories, like, the sugar mills, to test the chemistry of the sugar, da-da-da-da-da. So, and my dad is the only one that went to college, and he got a job as an engineer, as a chemist engineer, testing the products of the sugar that went to go out in production. My dad lasted there, I think, a whole week because he realized that it was all corrupt. Yo no sirvo para esto. Like, I might be many things, but corrupt I am not. So he went back to Mazatlan. He told my grandpa that he couldn't do it and that he was going to try his luck in the U.S.
We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Now back to the show.
Daisy finally made it back to the West Coast. She finished law school remotely from her sister's guest house in Orange County, which is about 20 miles south of her childhood home, where their parents were still living. And Daisy couldn't stop thinking about that.
This idea had been lingering in my head for a while. My parents stopped sleeping in the same bed a long time ago because the way those bunk beds were set up, there was just no way for them to, like, access the bathroom if they had to go in the middle of the night. So it was just easier for my dad to sleep in my sister's old bed, which was a twin, and then my mom to just sleep in the full, that was, like, the second bed under the top bunk. So I remember saying, like, this is not it. It's just, like, how is it that I have a room to myself and I have a bed to myself that I can comfortably live in and my parents don't have that? And I also remember there was broken floor in that room that my mom kept tripping over. And I remember one time she got a really bad bruise from it on her toe. Then my mom's diabetic. So we all know feet problems can lead to very big problems for diabetic people. The carpet was also bad. Like, the paint was horrible. Like, again, we all grew up there and nothing had ever changed, like, in that room. There was no upkeep. My parents are expected to be home and they can't even be comfortable and chill and kick it in their bedroom because they don't even have one.
You decide you're going to remodel your parents' home. Mm-hmm. You're going to build something for them that they've never had. Mm-hmm. Right? Walk me through that.
So we started by getting rid of the bunk beds. It was like, goodbye childhood. I called up my friend. Obviously, I'm not a one-woman show. I hit up Joe. He's a handyman and he's done stuff for my family for years now. This is what I'm thinking. And he's like, all right, cool. Is it just going to be us two? And I was like, let me see if Francisco's free. So Francisco's like, yeah, I mean, it's a pandemic. I got nothing to do. What are y'all doing? And he's like, yeah, I'm down. I'll come through. All right, bet. So it was just the three of us.
What did your parents think? What were your parents thinking when you were like, ma, pa? Voy a tumbar todo y lo voy a hacer mejor.
They thought I was bluffing. They really thought that I was like, oh, because I think out of the three, I probably have the most outrageous ideas. So they're used to like me just saying things and just being out of control. And they're like, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. So then they went to stay with my sister. So we like totally downplayed it because they just literally thought we were just going to like pick up the bunk beds and like just put a queen bed in there, like leave everything else, right? Like they never thought that we were just going to like literally gut everything. And like, they had no idea what we were doing.
How did you guys leave it? What did you transform it into?
So, okay, let me backtrack a little bit. So when you used to walk into the room on the right, you saw the bunk bed. You saw a twin up on top, a full in the middle, and then a pull-out twin. And then on the side of that bunk bed, you had another twin. Because remember, five people used to sleep in there. And then against the wall, you had a big closet thing, like an armoire. And then you had a bunch of little dressers. And then on top of those dressers, you had a TV, and then you had like random shelves because Daisy wanted more space for her makeup because she was going through a phase. And then on the other side, you had more shelves that don't even, none of these furnitures match because it just has been added on for years. And then in the other one, you had other shelves because my other sister was going through a phase where she wanted to like display, I don't even know what it was. So that was then. And they had a carpet, and then it also had a big stick that used to stick out through the carpet because it was water damage that never got fixed from years ago. So now you walk in and it's like, boom. Natural light everywhere. Super clean, crisp, white toned walls. You see to the right, you see one queen bed with their two side tables, like the nightstands, nice lamps. They don't turn on. You gotta say, Alexa, prende la luz, because my mom wanted that. You see a very nice high headboard. On the other side, you see a really low like dresser, and you see a TV, a super big TV hanged on the wall. And it all just looks crisp, beautiful. We had to leave one of those nice area rugs. It was blue and white because go Dodgers, per usual. And it was great. Like, it looks beautiful. It looks clean. It looks crisp. We added some plants. It looks peaceful. And it just looks like a space that my parents can finally relax and sleep together in after they haven't been able to do so in 20 years.
What was their reaction?
Oh, man. You know, I was a little scared about the reaction because, you know, Latina moms, they could really go one of two ways. Either like you really did it, or you're just about to get your ass kicked. And I think that's what it was with my nervousness. But the reaction was, oh, man. When my parents walked in, there was no speech, like there was nothing. And I was like, oh, shit, like, damn, like we fucked up, you know. But you just see their smiles, and I think they were just kind of taking it in. And my mom was like, where's my room? Like, this is not my room. And my dad was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, he took it in, and, like, he sat on the bed. And I think that's when he finally felt it, and he just started crying.
Pero en este cuarto crecimos. Este cuarto eran niñas. De este cuarto se fueron a la escuela.
It wasn't, like sniffles. It was, like, whole-on crying, and you know, he went to hug me, and then I was like, you know, my older sister being like the sociologist and professor that she's like, I'm like, why are you crying? Like, what are you Dad. Feeling? And he's like, I just
muchas gracias. Yo no sé qué decir. Yo siempre les di todo lo que pude. Nunca pudimos tener algo así.
We've never been able to have something like this. And I gave y'all absolutely everything. And I think, I'm getting emotional now, but just thinking about that moment with my dad, he's like, I gave y'all everything. And I was never able to have something like this. And like, I just didn't think it was going to be this nice. And it was just so much gratitude and so much love in his reaction that I never expected it. And he also touched upon how, like, you know, it might have been a small place, but we grew up, like when we came here, y'all were still little girls. I'm crying. I hate my life. I'm crying.
I'm crying too, by the way.
Good. I got you too.
You got me. You got me. It was so beautiful.
You know, he's like, y'all were still little when we came here. And you know, I think it also marked like a period of, wow, like I raised my girls, and now they're badass women, and I'm starting to collect the fruits of my labor type thing, is what I got from his reaction. And you know, obviously we talked later after, and he was just like, I don't even know what to say. Like, you know, because obviously they didn't pay for anything, or like they just kind of dipped and came back, and it was like magic. Like it was there. And he was just like, I don't know what to say. Like I don't know what to say aside from thank you. And I was like, no, like, y'all, like, this is the bare minimum anybody should be getting, because this is just a quality of life that should be given to humans, period.
And that video that Joe was recording, mm-hmm. part of that wound up on the internet.
It did. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
After the bedroom success, we kind of sat down and talked, because keep in mind, at some point during this bedroom success, we're like, yeah, send money for beer. We ran out of beer. And then people really did send money. We're like, oh, whoa. Like, there's only so much beer that we can drink before we start like fucking shit up in this room. And we had those funds. So I was like, guys, like, I legit think that we can redo the kitchen and like, or redo something. This is a project that we can legitly do long term. So that's when we formally became like the Hood Renovations team and decided to kind of pursue to see where this was going. You know, beautifying the hood just one room at a time.
You're such a visionary, like, for real. Like, it must be all those shoes. I need more shoes.
It's the shoes. It's 100% the shoes.
Those Air Force Ones are just like,
yeah. Well, like I just got the Air Forces with that metallic swoosh. Fresh. Let me tell you. Where am I gonna wear them? To the living room. But I have them. Is the point.
Let's take a moment to shout out all the fly ladies and the fly guys. Individuals with nowhere to be, but dressed to flex anyway. The people that reject garments that represent shabby, lazy, basic, nah. Instead, they declare that going downstairs is the new savage. This is how they get ready.
When I think about the living room, the name suits it well. There are many things living in this room, including my blue blazer, my red silk dress, hoop earrings, that orange pencil skirt, red lipstick, those white leather shoes that I'm even wearing right now. They won't live a life of dust, not while I'm in this room. I have to remind them that they still have mirrors to see and places to go. Like the movies, birthday parties, dance parties, even if they're solo. My therapist's office. You know, the kind of office where you supply your own favorite tea and your own water and your own box of tissues. My office, not as exciting as the dance party, but still in need of a heel, especially on Tuesdays. A date, but not the first date. The first date these days is always outside the living room. If you know what I mean. Even if the world doesn't feel like the world I've known before, I still arm myself with hoop earrings and perfume for the room. Because even with nowhere to go, I still gotta be me.
Do you feel like this story of yours inspires others?
I think that our stories are often frowned upon or shamed on because we don't have the luxury of space that a lot of people have. When I started posting all of this and the influx of messages saying, oh my God, I would have never guessed, or like, oh my God, I grew up that way too, or like, oh my God, we all know the Latino struggle with like the sardine packing and the seven people in the room type thing. And it was just like, people are out there, we're just not talking about it because for so long, I think it's made us feel like there was something wrong with us when in fact there isn't. It's more wrong with the system than it is how we're being raised. Or this idea of this American life that we just don't have yet.
This is going to sound wild, but Daisy's story reminds me of this viral Twitter video of Dodgers pitcher Victor Gonzalez. A lot of people who saw the Dodgers win the 2020 World Series will probably have this image of Julio Urias throwing that last strikeout to get the save, end the game, and bring out the squad to celebrate. But when I close my eyes to relive that joyous moment, I think about Victor Gonzalez's viral video. See, Victor was born in a beautiful but humble and tiny pueblo in Tuxpan, Nayarit. And from a young age, there was this pressure on him to do great things. When he was 16, Victor left Mexico to join the Dodgers farm system. And he struggled to compete with all these grown-ass men. But he kept going, trying to honor the sacrifices his grandparents and parents made for him, trying to live up to those expectations. Then his father died, and it broke Victor's heart. He went back to Nayarit and almost quit. But his family, that he was trying to carry to greatness, they actually lifted him back up. Victor Gonzalez was the winning pitcher in the deciding game of the World Series. And he got to do something a lot of us immigrant kids dream of. He got on the phone right after the Dodgers celebrated on the field and on a video call to his abuelo, his family, the whole pueblo. He got to say, I did it. I'm great for you. Feliz amigo. Arriba. That video call went viral on Twitter. And watching it made me think of people who dream big like Daisy, of my own parents and their hopes and dreams for me, of my own journey. And now, whenever I think of how dope it felt to see the Dodgers win a World Series in my lifetime, I will forever think of them and of Daisy's kicks still sitting crisp in a Boston storage container.
Highlights. I ate some albondigas that my tia made. I finished all my homework for the week. My grandma didn't yell at me today.
So today I went to go look at my new house that was just given. We just were given the keys, which is pretty exciting.
After this, I'm going to be doing hair and makeup and be shooting a video. I can't share what it is, but it's a really special song, and it's all, you know, para la cultura.
That was Sarah La Morena Palafox, an Afro-Latina banda singer whose love for her adoptive parents helped prepare her for giving birth in the middle of the pandemic. That's on the next episode of Wild.
This episode of Wild was written and produced by Eric Galindo, Megan Tan, and me, Shaka Mali. Sound designed by Lucy Guaba, and the fact-checking was by Marina Pena. It was mixed and engineered by Eduardo Perez, with additional help from Valentino Rivera. Megan Tan is our senior producer. Our producers include Victoria, Alejandro, and Lucy Guaba. Marina Pena is our associate producer. Eric Galindo is our host and editor. Jessica Pilot is our talent producer. Our executive producers are Antonia Cerejido and Leo G. Additional production for this episode was provided by Doug Geary, Hazmik Pahosian, and A. Martinez. And special guest appearances by Mildred Marie Langford, Dana Galindo, and Angel Lopez Galindo. Shout out to Marissa Klung Marata for shooting the album art and Steve Rosa for the assist. The theme song is I Got Everything by Ms. 007. Our website, LASstudios.com, is designed by Andy Cheatwood and the digital and marketing teams at LAS Studios. The marketing team at LAS Studios is responsible for our branding. Special thanks to the team at LAS Studios, including Taylor Kaufman, Kristen Hayford, Day Kim, Kristen Muller, and Leo G. Wild is a production of LAS Studios. This program is made possible in part by the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
I nailed it, I think. This is Eric G. I'll catch you next time.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.